Thanks for being a part of the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the David Curtin Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's Wednesday and this is today's News Talk, TNT. Now, of course, we know there is a migrant crisis in the English Channel, as there is in the United States, in the southern border. But if you live in the UK, you are probably feeling the effects of it. It has long been suspected that there has been an arrangement between the British and the French governments to escort migrants across in these small dinghies coming illegally with people traffickers. They pay people traffickers a number of thousands of euros in order to get in a dinghy. They get escorted to Dover or somewhere where they're landed and then get taken by bus to a nice four-star hotel. But yesterday, we have incontrovertible evidence that this is the case. A radio communication between the captain of a British cargo ship and the Coast Guard in Dunkirk was intercepted, recorded, and it's been taken up by a number of news outlets today. The conversation is extraordinary. It goes like this. The captain started his reporting of an incident to the Coast Guard in Dunkirk by saying, "I would like to report what is an illegal operation in your waters. This morning, we witnessed a French government vessel and a French Navy warship escort a boat load of illegal immigrants across the channel to the midway point where they handed them over to another ship out of Dover." This was a Border Force ship, which, as we know, is meeting people and escorting and carrying illegal migrants to Dover. "It has now arrived there. Now I have the French warship passing under my stern," so that's to the left, "passing another boatload of immigrants across the channel. There is also another French vessel to the west of us, which is escorting a third boat of migrants. This is not a search and rescue. This is illegal trafficking of humans." And the response from the Coast Guard to the ship was to say that there is an arrangement between the London and Paris governments for the French Navy to escort migrant boats towards Britain. So that is an actual conversation that took place, evidence there that there is actually an agreement. This is all being planned at the highest level. And the only response from the UK government and the Home Office is that this shows that we need to implement the Rwanda scheme quickly in order to sort the problem out, which, of course, we know is completely ridiculous. The Rwanda scheme has been on the table for 2 years. Not a single person has gone. We've given the government of Rwanda £120 million. Doesn't look like anything's going to happen. The bill is still being ping-ponged through Parliament between the Commons and the Lords. And even if it does get a royal assent, there can be challenges to this in the High Court, in the European Court of Human Rights again, because we're still in the ECHR, and Rishi Sunak, as we know, keeps on saying, "Oh, we might come out of the ECHR sometime in the future, but while we're still in it, there's nothing we can do." And here we find out that they are deliberately escorting migrants across the channel, all the same time while saying they need to do more to tackle human people trafficking. And we've given £500 million to France, to the French police, in order to try to stop migrants crossing the channel. And all the time, there is an arrangement in place that the French Coast Guard clearly knows about. The other thing the UK government says, the fake Conservative government and the Home Office, which they run at the moment, is that they're saying that we've been so successful in cutting the number of people coming across the boats by one third last year. Well, the thing about that is the highest ever number was in 2022. 2023, there was a third fewer migrants coming across, but that wasn't due to the efforts of the Home Office or the Border Force or the Royal Navy or the French police. It was because of the weather. We had a really stormy, rough, wet winter, particularly the last 3 months of last year, 2023, which pretty much stopped shipments across the English Channel for a couple of months. So where there are usually a lot of people coming over in October, November, there were very, very few last year. That's why there were fewer migrants. But there were still 29,000 coming across in small boats in 2023, which is the second highest level ever. So he can say, Rishi Sunak I'm talking about, can say, oh, this was a great success. But what he's basically saying is like someone making a massive mess in a fly tip and then clearing away 10% of it and says, look, aren't I wonderful? I've cleared up a little bit of the mess of the fly tipping I've made, but I've left 90% there. That's essentially what he's saying. And this year, of course, up to now, the number of migrants have come across in small boats across the English Channel illegally in 2024 is 6,265. 534 in one day at the weekend. So we are on course again for the highest level ever, a record number coming over in 2024. If things continue in the same vein and it's extrapolated, we will have more coming over this year in 2024 than the highest ever so far, which was 2022, in which just under 46,000 migrants came across illegally in small boats across the channel. And we have 130,000 in the UK still waiting to be processed as they put through their asylum claims. I would suggest the vast majority of them are bogus because they are mostly military-aged men coming from a safe country called France, and they don't need to be here because their life is not in danger. And where are the women and children? Genuine migration flows where people are really in danger and fleeing for their lives are mostly women and children. Here we have mostly men. It's clearly all bogus, and it's clearly now proven to be facilitated at the highest level. So we need to get rid of these fake conservative deceivers at the next general election. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You're watching The David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk, TNT. Gemma Cooper is with me to talk about the latest in the UK news headlines. Gemma, welcome. What's going on today?
Well, it's funny, your editorial actually ties in with Rishi Sunak, with something Rishi Sunak said just a few hours ago. He was asked about whether the RAF would be deployed with the Rwanda scheme, as it's you know, it's not been passed as law yet, although we're keeping a very close eye on that in the Commons this week. But of course, the RAF involvement in Israel has led people to ask this morning, you know, well, will you use our RAF jets or planes to take people to Rwanda? He wouldn't be drawn on it. But once again, he said the same rhetoric as you've just been illustrating. My priority, he said, is to stop the boats. That's all I'm interested in. We must stop the boats in terms of fairness, in terms of the British public. We must stop the boats. You know, and it's just this parroted out line, isn't it, which does grab headlines. This has grabbed headlines within the last couple of hours, you know, stop the boats, stop the boats. But as you clearly say, there is another agenda and agreement here going on behind the scenes, which you only find out about when we see reports like this from the ship's captain. So, yeah, say one thing and do another. But he's been saying it again this morning. His priority, David, is to stop the boats. So maybe he should be listening into TNT and hearing what we've got to say about it.
Well, if he listened to TNT, he'd get a right earful, I'm sure, because we're not going to mess about, you know, and say things which are, you know, he's speaking with a forked tongue, as they say. You know, he's gaslighting people, isn't he, really, saying we're going to stop the boats, but then the boats are being facilitated by the Home Office. And I'm sure, you know, someone in his government, maybe he himself, knows about what agreement is going on there. And it's absolutely deplorable and despicable, you know, but that's not the only thing. That everything they're doing, or everything that they're saying at the moment, they're trying to sound like they're conservative, which is what they do before a general election. But you know, if they get in, and they're probably not going to get in this time, but if they do, they would just revert back to type. There would nothing would be done about immigration. They'd be stringing us along for another 5 years, all the same time going on the net zero nonsense routes with all the implementation of more wind turbines and heat pumps and battery storage systems and attacks on farms and rewilding and all that kind of stuff that they want to do as well, which is going to cause it's an attack on our prosperity, it's an attack on our wealth and our economy, and that would go on as well. You know, the fake conservatives, they say the one thing that they were known for historically was actually for building a strong economy, but even that has gone completely out of the window with all of these charlatans which are in the government at the moment.
Well, that leads me into some of the rest of the headlines nicely, actually. I mean, one of the headlines today, which also Sunak is taking credit for, as of course he will, is inflation is down, not by as much as people thought. It's gone down from 3.4 to 3.2. People thought it would go down to 3.1 or possibly 3. But obviously the Bank of England now being watched to see if they will cut interest rates, which obviously will affect millions and millions of mortgages here in the UK, which, you know, the cost of which dominate most people's lives in many cases. So, you know, but Sunak's taking the credit for that. Too well, he would. You know, we're heading into electioneering, so of course you're gonna take the credit for anything. But I'm sure that there'll be something on his Twitter page later which will be roundly debunked or even fact checked about his role in bringing inflation down. Interesting as well that the former defense minister James Heapy, he only quit his post a few weeks ago. He's standing down as an MP at the next election, a Conservative MP along with 62 others, and also his position was former defense, so he's now free to speak a bit more openly. And he has said this morning that the Russia-Ukraine war will last well into 2026. He clearly knows something we don't know, and that the UK must continue absolutely to support Zelensky. And he also, very interesting language here this morning, James Heapy, he's compared the Iranian drone strikes on Israel at the weekend to a potential Pearl Harbor, which is very interesting considering many people think Pearl Harbor is not quite what it seemed. A lot of research has been done on that. But it's interesting that he does say, you know, we'd be prepared for the Russia-Ukraine conflict to drag on into 2026, when many people were hoping it would wrap itself up nicely. And staying with Israel, of course, dodgy David Cameron, our unelected foreign secretary, who absolutely will be prime minister again one day. I'll eat my hat if he's not. My many hats, actually. He's now in talks there, obviously, to stop anything escalating into what could be World War III. So we'll see how that goes and see if there's any nuggets we can pull out of that as the day goes on here on TNT.
Strange mixed messages there, isn't it? I mean, David Cameron is a massive war hawk. He's responsible for taking Britain to bombing Libya, bombing Syria, bombing Iraq, you know, in the 2010s, and obviously not in the first situation where the Iraq war started in 2003. But, you know, now he's saying that Israel should be cool and calm and not escalate the situation, which, you know, I agree with, but who knows what he's saying behind the scenes. But if, you know, people associated with the government are saying these other things, that the attack on the Nevatim airbase, which is what Iran did without killing a single person, was like Pearl Harbor. I mean, that's completely ridiculous, isn't it? And Pearl Harbor was huge, and so many American warships were destroyed and sunk and bombed. Hundreds, I don't know how many people lost their lives that day. I think it was thousands. I mean, I forgive me for my history not knowing that figure. But there's clear evidence that the people in the American government at the time knew that the Japanese were planning Pearl Harbor for months in advance. All the documentation is out there and in the open, but they didn't do anything because they wanted it to happen so that the American public would be outraged and that would allow them to get to war in Europe. You know, I mean, I don't say that that was all bad, because, you know, National Socialism went in Germany, and then, you know, we have what we have. So, but obviously they needed the American public on board in order to support America coming into the Second World War in Europe. I mean, maybe that's what they're thinking, that actually this is going to be an event that is going to change public opinion and sway public opinion behind Israel to support Israel. But I think that's gone because, you know, Iran didn't kill a single person, but Israel has killed 34,000 now in Gaza, children, women, innocent men as well. And the mainstream media and the government is not even mentioning that at all. They are completely blind and oblivious to the suffering of the Palestinian people in Gaza, which is being done by the nation that calls itself Israel, which is being done by the Netanyahu regime. And that regime is deplorable. And I think anyone with a head can see that. Even people in Israel are protesting against his regime. And a lot of them want him gone as well, because they don't like how he is dealing with this and the genocide which is in progress in Gaza. So it's not Pearl Harbor. This is just a proportionate retaliation for Israel's bombing of the Iranian consulate. And that needs to be said. Anyway, Gemma, thank you so much for bringing those stories and discussing the news with me today on today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Rick Munn.
Surely basic common sense should overrule any need for any report when it comes to this. I mean, is this the only time in history that a report would even be needed or be commissioned and take 4 years to write, to stop mutilating children, to stop messing around with their puberty and with their development, to stop indoctrinating them and assisting them to destroy their bodies before even the age of 18 in some cases? Surely that's basic common sense. At no other point in history, certainly that I'm aware of, in the United Kingdom or Ireland, has this been facilitated before. It's only been in the last, what, decade or so that this has started to become a thing, that doctors and teachers and parents and politicians have actually gotten behind and encouraged.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk TNT. It's really good to have with me on the show today Phil Rose, who is a Derbyshire County Councillor. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, David.
It's great to have you on. And I know you've got a lot to say about what is going on in Derbyshire in local government. And that's something that we touched on a lot in the show over the time I've been doing it. Because while people are focusing on things abroad and on, you know, trivialities around the world, things are happening with how our local councils are being structured, which is going to have real implications for everybody in the country, which, you know, which are more real to people's lives than things going on abroad, where our attention is diverted. So tell me what's happening in Derbyshire, or to an extent, Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire, which are all sort of bundled in with the plans together.
Yes, well, we're going to have a combined authority. And what that means is regional government. And it's something that I've been fighting against from the point where we were a part of the EU. And it seems to me that we haven't come out of the EU. And lots of the policies that the county are bringing in are basically EU policies. So the way it's supposed to work is we have the City of Nottingham, the City of Derby, the County of Derbyshire and the County of Nottinghamshire joining together in order to save money. The marketing I think Derbyshire spent on this this initiative is £6 million. Derbyshire County Council's got no money. I'm not I'm actually on the audit committee. So it's all desperate times. We've gone into reserves the last 2 years, and clearly this is part of the move toward regional government to take power away from the county and put it to the regional, the new regional mayor. So we had a consultation on this last year, just to coincide with Christmas. You know, it's a really good time to talk of governance, isn't it? You know, when people are really focused on that as opposed to Christmas. So we had we have 2.2 million people in the four areas. So all of them could have their say, as it were. You know what governments say, have your say, have your say. We'll ignore it, but have your say. we had 4,800 and something responses. And this is supposed to go out to everybody. There were something like six questions. Five of them were, would you like more money for social services? Would you like more money for transport? That type of question. So everyone, the answer is going to be yes, isn't it? And would you like a mayor for the East Midlands? And that was the only question that was sort of really pertinent. And the results came in, surprise, surprise, everybody wanted more money, but less people wanted a mayor. In fact, more people were against having a mayor and the change of governance than were for it. Obviously, everyone always wants more money. But the way it was couched in the report to the full council was that fewer people were in favour of a new mayor. That's because more people were against it, if you get my drift. So 4,800 out of 2.2 million, and that's okay. That was seen as a good result. So it's been railroaded through. It's taken like less than 2 years, seems to me. Obviously, they've been talking about it beforehand. I'm now getting so many messages and social media posts saying, what's this combined authority? What's this mayor business? I don't know anything about it. The majority of the population have no idea what's coming. We know what it's going to result in. It's going to result in LTNs. It's going to result in a push towards the combined authority away from the local democracy. So you're going to get less choice in how we spend our money. You've got, I think, a committee of eight. So you've got the mayor, then you've got some representatives from the various organisations, then you've got two corporate representatives. Now, we might have someone from Pfizer, for example, sitting on the combined authority. Well, that's lovely, isn't it? So it's just like when you get strategic partnerships. They look after each other, and the man in the street gets left behind and ignored and lost.
Well, see, this is going on all over England at the moment. So, I mean, what you're talking about is Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire.
Yes.
And I think, you know, what you've said, there's a lot of things that are very disturbing in what you've said, but that's happening everywhere. I mean, we've had combined authorities for a long time in the West Midlands, in Greater Manchester, Merseyside, in Tees Valley, obviously Greater London. The Greater London Authority is the biggest one. You've got Sadiq Khan has been the mayor there for 8 years. So this year in the election cycle, there's a new combined authority being created in York and North Yorkshire, for example. Plans are afoot everywhere, Devon, Sussex, wherever. So the plan is here really to get 40 mayors that are going to have the same kind of powers as Sadiq Khan. England's going to be split into 40 different regions, something like that, with 40 little Sadiq Khans that have got total power over a big part of the budget for spending in those areas. And that's really worrying. And, you know, I didn't know about these corporate representatives on the board. A new board is going to be created. I mean, if it was Pfizer, I mean, that really is going to be a massive two fingers up to everybody, basically, isn't it? But I mean, is there any election or any process for these corporate people on the board?
Well, this is the point, of course, and it's really the centralization of power. And it's top down. So the government will have more control. I'll get to answer your question in a second, but the government will have more control over the mayor and the distribution of resources. And they only have to talk to one body rather than other constituent bodies. So from the government's point of view, it's great. But yes, there are elections for the mayor, and they're coming up on May the 2nd. As I'm aware, there's a Ben Bradley is standing for the Conservatives, and he's like the Emperor of Nottinghamshire. I think he's in charge of Mansfield District Council. He's also MP for Mansfield, and now he wants to be mayor. We have a Labour candidate that comes from Watford, so you know she obviously has a great feeling for Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire. And we have a Reform candidate, Alan Graves, who actually is standing on the "I want to dismantle the whole thing." And I don't know. I don't think there's a Liberal candidate, but you know, so we have someone who ideally wants to do away with the combined authority. So whether he will be able to do that, I'm not sure. But
what I would say is that, you know, I'm not a big fan of Reform, but I do know Alan Graves. I know Alan Graves personally, you know, back in the days when we were all fighting for the referendum. So, you know, he would be a good guy, you know, on a personal basis. I would certainly support him.
Yeah. The issue we have is I'm involved with lots of sovereign groups. And of course those groups are saying, well, you don't even engage with the election. And the trouble is, if you don't engage with the election, then the bad guys win. And that's what happens. So I've been trying to get across to people that, you know, we have somebody standing that is against the whole idea and has actually fought against some time. Doesn't matter what party it is, but he's against the whole concept. So why don't we give our vote to that person? And they say, oh, well, once he gets in, he'll be corrupted like all the rest of it. Well, that may be so, but we've got this much chance rather than no chance at all. So I'd rather take the chance. And I know Alan as well. And I know he's fought this for a long time. And he is a good choice if you don't want the combined authority.
That's great. Now, Phil, we're going to have a little quick news break here, and we'll come back and carry on talking about this in a minute. Brilliant. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT Radio News.
I have some exciting news.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. After helping defend Israel against an Iranian attack, the US says it will not offer the same level of protection to Ukraine.
Different conflicts, different airspace. Different threat picture.
Israel's been accused of killing near a dozen children in a drone strike in central Gaza. Much of the desert city of Dubai is underwater after receiving 2 years' worth of rain in a single day. And the FBI has launched a criminal investigation into last month's deadly bridge collapse in Baltimore.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk TNT. Now, Phil Rose is with me, and we were just talking about the creation of a combined authority and a mayor for that combined authority in Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire. What's happening there, though, although it's two counties, the same plan is being rolled out all across England. So we're just talking about that, and you were mentioning, you know, the election is coming up for this. The first election for a mayor is coming up this year. And the thing with these elections for these new mayoral positions, which is concerning to me, is that the deposit to even stand in these elections is huge. Is it £5,000 or £10,000, something like that?
Yeah, I think it's 5,000. I'm not 100% sure, but it does stop democracy, really, because obviously you've got to be either backed, which means you owe somebody something, or you're a political party, and then you're going to, of course, get funded, but then the political party owns you, which is, of course, one of the problems with our political system at the moment.
Yeah. I don't. And it's the same for these, you know, you've got police and crime commissioners, the fee to enter those is very high as well. So for a small party, and I mean, I'm in the Heritage Party, we haven't got anyone standing in these mayoral contests because, you know, we need to spend our money elsewhere. If you've got a limited amount of money, you can't do that. But, the question is, if someone gets in, I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen here? I mean, we mentioned Alan Graves, who we both know personally. I think he would be the best person to vote for in this particular election. But say someone else got in, what would they want to do? I mean, you mentioned before the sort of low traffic neighborhoods, but would they be basically an agent of pushing the whole globalist and climate agenda and woke agenda? I mean, we see, you know, Birmingham's got clean air zones, which is more charging for cars. There's the ULEZ in London. What sort of things would happen on a practical basis?
Yeah, they're exactly the type of things that would happen. And the centre of power is then further away, and it's harder to make representations. And it's just coming from the centre. It's coming from national government. It's coming from world government, global government. And this is a way to funnel down global policies, which none of us want for the most part, into the local communities. Even on my parish council, we have declared a climate emergency. I had a big argument with the clerk because, you know, I know that there isn't a climate emergency, but it puts pressure, and it means once and this is the thing with smaller parties, we have to start from the parishes and build on the boroughs and do all that. But that's a way we can do it. But of course, now the power is being removed from the parishes don't have much power anyway, but the boroughs and the districts, and it's moving past the counties and going up to these combined authorities. So we have no chance as individuals really to have any influence on what's coming down from the top. And this, again, as I said at the start, it's all part of the EU process that we were fighting for so long. I mean, I remember 20 years ago, there was in Nottingham and Derby, there's the Greater Nottingham Housing Market Area, which was about creating a housing policy for sort of over more than just one local authority, but over a range of local authorities surrounding Nottingham, and the Derby one surrounding Derby. So local districts lose power to determine their own housing needs and are told from up above that they have to build houses for some other agenda, for the cities. Now, you know, and that is the starting point of this regionalization of local politics and local government. And it all comes from the top, and it's all controlled from the top. So it's not bottom up. It's top down. Now, what we're looking for is bottom up politics. And I think we would agree that that's the way forward. I mean, I'm talking to a guy called Neil Petrie, who's involved in the idea of direct democracy. He's really pushing that. He has an organization which is based on a Swiss style governance, where you have many referendums. Like any constitutional change would need a referendum from the public. And I think that's the way forward. It's a positive initiative. The only issue is, of course, you've got to have an educated population. And that's one of the other problems. Most people don't know what's happening. Most people still watch mainstream news. And while we might talk in an echo chamber, you know, you and myself and others, you know, the majority don't get it. They don't get what's happening. And it's like with this mayoral thing, you know, nobody wants it, but nobody knows about it. I mean, they're only finding out now, sort of 2 years in, the election's on May the 2nd, and they just start saying, well, what's this? I don't know anything about this. But that's another issue. Like with the climate change, I mean, if you only have to do like 10 minutes of research and you find out exactly what that's about, it's about money. It's not about the changing climate. But most people, unfortunately, think there is something in it. I mean,
there's huge propaganda for these things, isn't there? And they've got, like you say, there's a huge amount of money going in, filtering into the mainstream media to push these, pushing the agenda in schools as well, and in politics. Like you say, more money is going to go to this combined authority mayor, and I guess that means there's less money going to the districts, less money going to the parishes and town councils. And this is really, to me, it is a debasement of democracy. Because, you know, you need money to stand in these mayoral elections. But then once they're in for 4 or 5 years. There's nothing you can do to challenge them. They won't be accountable to anyone, like Sadiq Khan in London. Yeah. He's not accountable. There's a London Assembly, and I was on the London Assembly. I could ask him questions. And it was good. I asked him questions that no one else was willing to answer. But at the end of the day, he could just turn around and say, well, I'm the mayor. I've got the power. I can do what I want. And I don't care, need to take notice of what you say. So it's terrible. But I really hope, Phil, it's been really good to talk to you. We're sort of out of time for this section of the show now. I hope you can come on and talk some more. But, you know, what I would say before you go and encourage people watching is to get involved in local politics. While we still have it, definitely, we still do have parishes and town councils and district councils. Get involved, stand, even, you know, put yourself right forward, stand for Westminster and, you know, try to get in, because, you know, it's Westminster that's created these combined authority mayors and these combined authorities, which are taking democracy away from people. Yeah. We need ultimately to get people into Westminster to undo this as well, and to give real power back to people at the most local level.
We've got a great guy in Humber Valley. Great guy in Humber Valley, Alex Stevenson. I'll give a plug to Alex. He's a fantastic local candidate, and he believes all the things we've been talking about. He's completely on side. So
that's great. Thanks.
He's a good guy.
Thanks, Phil. Okay. Fantastic.
Thank you, David. Fantastic.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Good to talk to you. Bye-bye. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like, I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy, there's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible, I'm dying.
I wasn't working, so I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief, and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
When you need to know what's going on in the UK, David Curtin has his finger on the pulse. Today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk, TNT. And it is fantastic to have back on the show Bishop Kai Dewar. Welcome, Kai.
Morning, David. Thanks for having me on. Good to see you.
Really good to have you on again. And, you know, how's things going with you? What have you been up to since the last time you were on the show?
Well, I'm trying to get into a quieter life, but I'm failing miserably because I seem to be busier than ever. But really, at the moment, just a lot of my attention is spent looking at what's happening geopolitically and trying to interpret that in a semiotic kind of way to understand the signs of the times as laid out in biblical prophecy, and just basically seeing where we're at in the grand scheme of timing of everything that's going on and the significance of certain things playing out on a geopolitical level. So that's occupying a lot of time lately.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I totally understand that, because you are a Pentecostal bishop and you are an international speaker. So yeah, you need to know about what's going on. And a lot of people are looking at what's happening, you know, first of all in Ukraine and then in the Middle East, and, you know, I've got different reactions to that. I mean, you know, everyone knows what I think about this, but, you know, this has escalated, it seems, in this month, with the 1st of April, Israel attacking the Iranian consulate, and then the weekend, Iran then retaliating against Israel and firing some missiles at an airbase. And all the while, things are going on in Gaza as well. Yeah. What do you make of it all?
Well, I think there's a lot that's at play. We have to take into consideration, for me, speaking as a clergyman and as a Christian, there are three key elements at play here. There is a political war that's going on. There is a physical conflict that's going on. And there is this historic supernatural battle playing out between Israel and its enemies. And I always apply what's going on in light of looking through Scripture, because people don't understand, so much of what we're seeing now was prophesied thousands and thousands of years ago. So when the attack on Israel happened, I sat back and I was a little apprehensive, right, where are we going to go from here? And in the hours unfolding after that, when you see, you know, Russia then threatens America, if you get involved, we're back Iran, and then suddenly Libya's supporting Hezbollah in the Lebanon and launching rockets. And there's a passage of Scripture in Ezekiel 38 which lists five countries that led by the prince of Russia, the leader of Russia, would come against Israel. So for a moment there over the weekend, I thought, my gosh, we're awfully close to it. And then there are other things playing out that the media aren't covering that are kind of catalytic towards certain things. At the moment, there is a growing support for the Third Temple movement within Israel, for the rebuilding of the temple destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. And of course, both in Jewish tradition and Jewish scriptures, and within the Christian scriptures, and to some extent within the Islamic scriptures, that key event is a precursor to what we know as the Battle of Armageddon, the battle for the end of days. And so there's a lot playing out. And I watched particularly Israel's actions and reactions. And people have to take into consideration what happened after October 7th is a reaction to what happened on the 7th of October. And I know that we all, you know, the international community is talking about, well, is it proportionate? Is it this? Is it that? Who's to decide what one country determines as proportionate? Iran nuking the entire Western civilization off the face of the planet, in their estimations, is completely proportionate in relation to what they want to achieve. So there's a lot playing out here. The coming days are going to be very, very key to see whether or not Netanyahu does retaliate, the extent of the retaliation, who is involved. And that lines up a lot of, are we about to see a massive conflict in the Middle East, which would ultimately drawing many, many parties from around the world, and for all intents and purposes, bring us close to, if not fully immersed in, a third world war over the defense of the only democratic state in the Middle Eastern region. So there's a lot going on, a lot of other things at play as well, which, you know, what people aren't taking into consideration. But that whole region is a tinderbox waiting to explode if the wrong trigger kicks it off.
Yeah, I must say that I do have a different view on some of the things that you've said there. I mean, I don't think that what's happening is prophesied in the Bible as such. A lot of this is in the Talmud, and I know mm-hmm. that, you know, people who follow the Talmud are trying to establish a third temple because that was destroyed in 70 AD. Of course, that was written up by Josephus in those times, and they're looking for that to bring back the Jewish Messiah, because people who follow the Talmud, you know, Orthodox Jews who've rejected Jesus as the Messiah, are still looking for a fake Messiah, if you like, because they don't accept Jesus. I mean, so a lot of the things, I mean, I see a lot of the things in the Old Testament that sometimes people say are about now in the 21st century were actually about Jesus in the first century and the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in 70 AD. I mean, that's my opinion. So I probably have a different opinion on that to you. I know it's a commonly held belief. And I think, you know, we can talk about these things with respect and say, you know, I think this, you think that. But the most important thing about Christianity is Jesus coming back, to die for us and to rise again so that we can be saved from our sins and have salvation. And, you know, whatever happens in these times, Jesus is coming back again. We'll have the ultimate victory. And, you know, when he does come back, all of these things to do with, you know, Israel, Iran, Gaza will be, you know, forgotten, because he will come back, because he is the Messiah. But, you know, in terms of the Middle East, I mean, my main concern as a Christian is that Christians, whether they are Messianic Jews or Palestinian Orthodox Christians in Gaza and the West Bank, have the freedom to worship as Christians and to share their faith. And, you know, I am concerned that the Israeli Defense Force has been targeting churches and killing Christians in Gaza. And that's something I think often gets forgotten in all of this. And so I don't know. I don't want to, you know, labor the point on this. We got other things to talk
David,
about. Did you want to say something? Yeah.
I'm with you 100% on that. And within the context of the broader scope of the religious debate, the IDF are not just targeting Christians and Christian churches, whether intentionally or unintentionally in Gaza. There's still this long-running debate of the way that the Israeli government have passed this anti-proselytization law within Israel, the fact that the IDF are barring entry to the Temple Mount to anybody that is non-Jewish at the moment. There is a boiling pot going on under there, and I think there's a lot of questions have to be asked, because the Jews want the freedom to worship themselves, but that is a two-way relationship when you have a multi-faith community. We see it in the UK. You know, we have many faiths in the UK, and we try to make sure that there isn't a hindrance for anybody outside of the Christian faith to practice their religion in a safe and respectable manner. Of course, like every state, that gets abused by fundamentalists and religious zealots within every faith, and we've seen it around the world. But I'm 100% with you on that. To me, what's happening in Gaza and spilling over, not getting much coverage, into the Palestinian territory on the West Bank, there are a lot of questions that have to be asked about the way Israel is treating people and targeting certain things there. And in the grander scheme of things, they need to be looked at in a much greater detail. And I don't think the West, the supposed Christian governments, as you know, because we live in Christian countries, can simply just sweep that under the carpet and ignore the fact it's going on, because we have a blanket support for Israel in the Middle East. So I'm with you 100% on that one. That's caused me a lot of concern. And having been to Israel many times, seen the sites that are relevant to the Christian faith, being on the water where Jesus walked and all of these things, my heart goes out to the Christians that are being persecuted in those regions and those that are affected not of my faith. And Christians need to remember this. We are supposed to extend the love of Christ to all mankind. So whilst I have whilst I'm concerned about my fellow believers, I have a care and a compassion for those affected by what's going on, irrespective of their faith, irrespective of whether they believe in a religion or have no religion whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we have reactions from people in Western governments. I wouldn't call them Christian. These people are unelected. Foreign Secretary David Cameron, Biden, Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State in the USA. And it seems that they're sort of in two minds. You know, some of them are talking about escalating, you know, retaliating more, which might lead to World War III. And others seem to be, you know, trying to stay Israel and say, well, you know, don't retaliate. Just let this be, you know, one, you know, you've struck them, they've struck you. Let's just calm down and not escalate things at the moment. What do you make of what the people in power have said in the West?
I think it's ridiculous. I genuinely think it's ridiculous. From the outset, a cry for calm should have been the underlying voice of anybody, of any reason within any Western democracy. We need to stop this now before it gets out of hand. Not while we support this kind of retaliation, but we don't support that kind of retaliation. And when you look at, you know, I use the term Christian, and I use it very loosely when I reference President Biden, you know, the supposed Catholic. For a man that professes the Catholic faith, the actions that you have perpetuated during your presidency and as vice president lead me to firmly believe you are as far from Catholicism as you could possibly get. And if you do believe in Christ, it certainly isn't the Christ of the scriptures that I read. And the same with a lot of Western leaders. But I also think in the flip side of that, the other side of the coin, Iran is emboldened by the fact that you have a Biden administration removing sanctions from it, by the fact we had an Obama administration pumping billions of dollars of cash into the purchase of, supposedly purchasing American hostages for their release. Iran wouldn't be in the position it is today if they didn't have the cash that had been made available, if they didn't feel emboldened and empowered by certain Western powers that are you know, not taking sufficient action and actually empowering them. And what astounds me in it all, when I look at just America in two Democratic presidencies and how they dealt with Iran, Iran has been the state sponsor of more American deaths around the world than any other country in the world. And yet you want to help them. Yet you want to empower them. You want to give them money, remove sanctions against them. When everything within me thinks you are opening the floodgates and giving the enemy the tools by which they will destroy you, given half a chance. So there's a lot at play in this whole situation. For me, not just as a believer, but as a rational thinking human being, right now, everything needs to be done to establish calm in the Middle East. And we have to find a way to de-escalate this, because you have two powers there that are lining up with each other that at the moment, given the weakness coming out of the White House and the stance on certain things, would quite happily annihilate the West from existence.
Indeed. And, you know, it's also related to the situation in Ukraine as well, which has been going on. I mean, you know, you and I have been calling for de-escalation. Well, I certainly have in Ukraine as well for 2 years. But do you think that the actions of the West have been counterproductive? Because now it's almost like you have Russia, Iran, China have become allies with each other. And, you know, there's two different conflicts going on. The West is trying to do certain things in Ukraine. Western governments are supporting Israel. I'm taking more of a neutral stance myself. But, you know, then you've got this power block of you know, the countries all over Eurasia aligning with each other. We haven't got too much long left, but, you know, do you think that that's been counterproductive?
Completely. And to me, it's just a show of force. Right now, what I'm looking at, in my own opinion, is watching a play out of who has the most testicular fortitude, as I call it, who's got the biggest cojones as a world leader. I people don't like me for saying it, but I will say it. If Trump was still in the White House, there wouldn't have been a war in the Ukraine, because Putin knew exactly where he stood. What happens is, when your enemy spies weakness, when you give them an inch, they will take a mile. And in Obama, when Putin called his bluff, Obama backed down, and Biden's just too old and too senile to even flex a muscle anyway. Mm-hmm. Putin knew exactly what he was doing. So between now and the end of the year and the next presidential inauguration, what happens is going to be very key. How it all plays out and who is the American mm-hmm. president come the first Friday of November is really going to determine what happens for at least the next 4 years, both with mm-hmm. an end to the Ukrainian conflict, and how the new superpowers trying to emerge really shape up.
Yeah, indeed. Well, there's so much more we could talk about on these two huge geopolitical issues. But Bishop Kaijua, thank you so much for joining me on the show today and giving your opinions and thoughts on what's happening here. I'd love to have you on again. Thanks for joining me today. This is today's News Talk TNT.